KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, inviting you to experience the science of story. 6 days of programming celebrating how and why we tell the stories that move us from July 23rd through the 28th at UC San Diego. Events include Clarion Writers Masterclass, A Tale of Two Sulus, an evening with George Takei and John Cho, Star Trek in concert with the San Diego Symphony, and more. For information, visit artpower.ucsd.edu.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. Today's Arts and Culture Show takes us to the production of Tick, Tick, Boom, an exhibit that explores the intersection of being undocumented and LGBTQ+, along with your weekend preview. Here's the conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. We'll talk with lead actor in the production of Tick, Tick, Boom, A.J. Raphael.
If I'm able to inspire and encourage people to pursue their dreams and tell their stories, then I'll have done my job as John, who happens to be a Filipino-American actor.
Then the curator and artist of the Oceanside Museum exhibit, Undocumented Times, Queer Yearnings, joins us. Plus, Julia Dixon Evans gives us the rundown of arts and culture in the weekend preview. That's ahead on Midday Edition. This summer, Signet Theater is staging its own version of Tick, Tick, Boom. It's a semi-autobiographical musical by celebrated composer Jonathan Larson, and it follows John, an aspiring theater composer, as he navigates love, friendship, and his quest for greatness. Singer-songwriter A.J. Raphael will take on the lead role. This also marks his San Diego theater debut, and he joins me now. A.J., welcome to Midday Edition.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So glad you're here. So how did you get involved in this production of Tick, Tick, Boom?
Well, you know, I love musical theater, and my friend Lucky, who was an associate assistant director in a musical that I was in a couple years ago at East West Players up here in LA, he contacted me saying, hey, we're looking for a John. And me, in my own mind, I'm like, I don't know if I'd ever be a John Larson, but sure, I'll submit. And he got my tape. And a week later, I got an offer from the director and music director, and we were on a Zoom. So yeah, it was an easy decision for me, even though it's all the way out in San Diego, because I've always wanted to play a role like this. And I relate to John in so many ways. So that was that journey in a nutshell.
Well, tell me more about John Larson. I mean, who is he and how do you see yourself in him and his story?
Well, you know, for those who may be unfamiliar with Jonathan Larson, he is the creator of, you know, the hit musical Rent, which changed musical theater when it, you know, first debuted. And it was also the first musical that I really got into as a kid as well. But, you know, he struggled his whole life with just wanting to tell his story. And he wanted to, you know, share his, you know, his experiences through his writing. And that's something that I've related to all my life. I'm a singer-songwriter myself. And, you know, I always struggle with which stories I want to tell. But at the end of the day, you know, I'll always just say my truth and speak from my perspective. So that's kind of where we connect, and we get to continue his legacy with this show. You know, he unfortunately passed away right before the debut of Rent on Broadway. And I'm sure he would be very, very proud to see, you know, theaters all over the world doing his work.
Wow. Well, we actually have a clip from a mashup you did of Tick, Tick, Boom and Rent. Let's take a listen.
Or life is yours to miss. No other road, no other way, no day but today. They're singing happy birthday. You just wanna lay down and cry. Not just another birthday, it's 39. Turn 30 in the 90s, bang it in. What can you do?
just excellent to hear. Can you tell us more about, you know, what we just heard and what those musicals mean to you?
Yeah, sure. So I posted a little medley on my Instagram with songs from Rent and Tick, Tick, Boom. I had my Instagram followers kind of guess which musical I'd be in. And all of those songs from Rent really, you know, they coincide with the Tick, Tick, Boom songs because John Larson was pretty much writing all those songs at the same time. So you'll hear a lot of the themes and similar genres of music in Tick, Tick, Boom and in Rent. So I just thought it would be a really fun thing to put them together. And, you know, again, the musical Rent means so much to me as it was one of the first musicals I ever listened to. So putting these together and now getting to play Jonathan Larson is pretty much a full circle moment for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given John Larson's legacy, what does it mean to you to be stepping into those shoes as a Filipino-American artist?
To me, especially being Filipino-American and not having much representation, you know, on the stage and TV and screen when I was younger, now there's an amazing amount of it. I feel like me being able to tell John Larson's story, who is not an Asian American, I get to kind of tell it with in my own perspective in a way, obviously still using his text and his songs. But, you know, there's another layer when you see a person of color on stage because of the, you know, the unique things we go through as Americans here. So, yeah, it means a lot to me because especially hopefully I'll be able to inspire, say, a young Asian American or a person of color in the audience and have them look at me telling this story and say, hey, this box that I put myself in, it doesn't matter. And I'm able to do this. So if I'm able to inspire and encourage people to pursue their dreams and tell their stories, then I'll have done my job as John, who happens to be a Filipino American actor.
All right. And you've been doing musical theater for several years now. Where did you get your start?
Oh, man, musical theater means so much to me. Back in sixth grade, I was wanting to join choir, and my choir teacher was actually also the drama teacher, and she didn't have room to put me in her choir class. And she said, hey, why don't you join drama? So I did. And I was actually in my first musical. It was called Bugsy Malone Jr. And she was actually very impressed that I was able to play piano at that age. So she had me sing and play a song for that musical, which is really cool because I get to do that now. I'm able to play and sing in this musical. So again, another full circle moment for me. And then throughout the years in when I was in college, I was in productions like Urinetown and Footloose. And fast forward to 2018, I was in an awesome production at East West Players, which is the longest running Asian American theater in the country. I was able to do Mamma Mia there with an all people of color cast, and it was very, very awesome.
Oh, great. And your family, they're also very musical. You actually have a few loved ones who are in theater too. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, first of all, both of my sisters do musical theater, and one of them, her name is Jasmine Raphael. She's on Broadway right now. She's part of the original Broadway cast of And Juliet, which is a story about Romeo and Juliet, if Romeo died and Juliet didn't. And another loved one who is currently doing a musical right now is my wife, Alyssa. And we actually found out we booked these roles on the same day back in February. So she is Belle in Beauty and the Beast at the Nocturne Theater out here in Glendale. She will take her final bow on Sunday. And I will, 2 days later, have my first rehearsal as John. So, you know, having this kind of musical family where we understand, hey, there's time for rehearsals, there's times where we're going to have to focus. And then for me being at home, there's times where I got to take extra care of the dogs and do extra things here at home. And then we're going to switch off in a couple days. It's an amazing thing. We've learned how to communicate better. And yeah, it's a wild journey to be able to support each other.
Well, as we've touched on, you're best known for being a singer-songwriter. In fact, you were just on tour. I want to play one of your most recent songs. It's called Take Me Back.
I miss the old you too. I miss my friends. I miss those days when I could call them up, come start a song at the house again. I miss being at the piano, singing all of the jams, and making video songs everybody knows, wishing it would never end. Oh, I hope that I don't seem stuck in the past. So take me back to the good days, MySpace top 8, everybody jamming with the crib. Sang a Fensta songs on my Tumblr, damn, we were still just kids. Take me back to the good years, won't fool sad tears, time it goes so fast. Oh, I hope that I don't seem stuck in the past, but take me back.
It's pretty nostalgic. What inspired you to write that?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I come from a time where, you know, being on YouTube was a super DIY thing. And again, there were not many Asian Americans on the screen and whatnot. So a lot of my friends, we were just posting YouTube videos for fun. And this song, Take Me Back, takes us back to those days where we were posting on MySpace and YouTube all the time just to get our music and our videos out there. So again, I you know, reference things like Game Boy and watching Dragon Ball Z and the MySpace days. And that to me was a very important time because, again, as you said, people know me as a singer-songwriter. Having a million subscribers on YouTube is, I'm so grateful for it. And at the same time, you know, I have other passions like musical theater and doing other things. So, you know, singing Take Me Back on tour is amazing. And then I'll be doing this musical. And then I'll actually be going back on tour just a week after we close Tick Tick Boom. So again, all of these things are happening in my life and I'm just grateful I get to do it all.
I mean, your music was the soundtrack for many Filipino Americans growing up. We're listening to We Could Happen from your debut album.
I'll hold the door, please come in and just sit here for a while. This is my way of telling you I need you in my life. It's so cold without your touch. I've been dreaming way too much. Can we just turn this into reality? 'Cause I've been thinking about you lately. Maybe you could save me from this crazy world we live in. And I know we could happen, 'cause you know that I've been feeling you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow, that really takes me back. Again, take me back. I wrote that song back in 2010, and it kind of became a staple with a lot of Filipino parties. People would always send me videos of them jamming to that song with their cousins, learning the ukulele chords and the solo on the ukulele. And even till now, you know, when I get recognized and it's a like a Filipino couple with a stroller and they have a baby, they say, "Hey, oh my gosh, I proposed with your song," or "I asked my girlfriend a prom with this song and now she's my wife and she has a kid." You know, to hear kind of how my music has lived on in a lot of different ways is very, very cool. And I'm really grateful. And I'm also grateful that maybe more people will know about my music after doing this musical in San Diego, in hopes that even a song from 2011, like We Could Happen, could be new to them too.
Right. And like we mentioned, this is your San Diego theater debut, but I understand that you have many personal ties here. Tell me about that.
Okay. First tie is that I wrote a song called How's San Diego, Polly? And it was about this girl who lived in San Diego, and I had just met her online back in 2004. And if you can imagine, you know, back in that day, we only had AOL Instant Messenger. Webcams were barely becoming a thing. And I was just like in love with this girl that I met online, which was so funny to think about. And fast forward a little later, 2 years later, I have my first show at Southwestern College out in San Diego. And this is my first show where I got gas money to go drive out to the college and play some music, and I was selling some shirts and CDs. So, you know, to be back in San Diego after all this time doing a musical this time, because we also visited San Diego a year ago on tour. We did House of Blues two nights in a row, sold out back to back, and now doing a musical again, so many full circle moments. And the Filipino community in San Diego is just so loyal and so hype. So I'm just glad to be back.
Well, you start rehearsals soon. How are you preparing to take on this role?
Oh man, I have never had this amount of material ever. The past couple roles that I've played in Grease, Mamma Mia, Spring Awakening have kind of been supporting roles. This will be my first lead role in a long time since college. And I've just been listening to the soundtrack every single day. And I've read the script a couple times by now before rehearsals start, just to kind of get that head start. And also, I think that when rehearsals start, I'll really, really be able to be in that mindset. I was looking at Jonathan Larson's like style back in the day in the 90s. And honestly, just like maybe wearing a Henley button shirt like he did just to get there. So I'm excited to start the process. And however it comes, you know, I have open energy to how I'll be able to channel John and tell this story.
So when can we expect to see you on stage? That's the big question.
So yeah, we have about a month of rehearsals, and we go into dress rehearsals the first week of July. But the official press opening is July 6th, with previews starting on July 3. So we'll get a couple in there before we officially open up. And we're going to run for about a month. Again, that's out in San Diego for my friends out here in LA and in the Inland Empire who are willing to drive down. I'm hoping to see a lot of familiar faces since I'll be, you know, moving for rehearsals and for the shows.
I've been speaking with singer A.J. Raphael. You can catch him on stage at Cygnet Theater's production of Tick, Tick, Boom starting July 3rd. A.J., thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, an exhibit explores life while being undocumented and LGBTQ+.
Even though undocumented and queer people are perhaps the most vulnerable populations, there's also a lot of strength and power within our community.
More on that when we return. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, inviting you to experience the science of story. 6 days of programming celebrating how and why we tell the stories that move us from July 23rd through the 28th at UC San Diego. Events include Clarion Writers Masterclass, A Tale of Two Sulus, an evening with George Takei and John Cho, Star Trek in concert with the San Diego Symphony, and more. For information, visit artpower.ucsd.edu.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. In the U.S., about 3% of undocumented adults are members of the LGBTQ+ community. That's according to a 2021 report from the Williams Institute UCLA School of Law. Undocumented queer and transgender immigrants live at the intersection of two marginalized groups, navigating not only xenophobic violence, but homophobic and transphobic violence, too. Alexa Vasquez is an artist highlighting that experience. Her work is the subject of an exhibit open now at the Oceanside Museum of Art. It's called Undocumented Times, Queer Yearnings. She joins me now. Alexa, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So glad you're here. Also here with us is Liliana Ramirez. She is the curator of the exhibit we're discussing today. Liliana, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for having me as well.
So glad to have you both here. So, Liliana, I want to start with you. You met Alexa while researching undocumented artists for your dissertation at UC Irvine. What about Alexa's work really stood out to you?
I found Alexa through Instagram, actually. So part of like my personal, but also, I guess, academic research process for to find undocumented artists was to follow a lot of artists that are undocumented, and, you know, people post different things and it kind of snowballed. So at some point in the past few years, I ran into Alexa's work. And when the opportunity came to do this exhibition, I remembered her work. It was interesting because I couldn't remember her name, but I knew I found her through mutual friends. So I went through different profiles until I found Alexa through one of her old exhibitions. And what I really liked about her work was how intimate and tender her artwork is. There's a lot of themes of migration, but because it focuses a lot on childhood, if there was something that drew me back to my own childhood as a kid. And I think it does that for a lot of people.
Well, and Alexa, I want to hear your story. I mean, what was it like growing up undocumented while also coming to terms with your gender identity?
Yeah, being queer and trans was kind of the same experience as being undocumented. I always share this experience with my friends. I came out as queer and trans to my family, and then they came out to me as undocumented. So I think both experiences are very parallel and share similarities of existing like in the shadows almost.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand your own personal story mirrors Alexa's, Liliana. So tell me about that connection.
Yeah, I think as we talked more, the connections became more evident. So we both actually crossed the border through San Ysidro, which is the southern border of California, by San Diego. We were both kids. I believe Alexa crossed in 1991 and I crossed in 1999, so just a few years apart. But besides that, I'm also a queer undocumented person with DACA. I did grow up knowing I was undocumented, so it was a little bit flipped. There was never really a coming out about my status, but it was having to share to other people and deciding when I could tell people that I was undocumented, because as a migrant child, especially undocumented migrant child, you're told to never share that with anybody. And of course, when you're queer, there's a hesitancy to know who's safe to tell, and then telling your family is, it could be risky depending on your family dynamics.
Right. Well, that brings me to the exhibit. It's called Undocumented Times / Queer Yearnings. What's the driving message behind the exhibit, Liliana?
The driving message is that queer people exist within undocumented communities and vice versa. And even though undocumented and queer people are perhaps the most vulnerable populations, there's also a lot of strength and power within our community. And especially as migration continues, there's more and more, unfortunately, undocumented children, unaccompanied children. There needs to be more compassion and tenderness towards those experiences, knowing that a lot of these children will also be queer, and some of their experiences will mirror what the exhibit talks about.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of the work we'll expect to see. I'm wondering if you can describe this piece for me, Alexa, called First Generation. What's going on in this image?
So First Generation is an actual picture that was taken of my siblings and I before my family separated due to migration. My father migrated with my older siblings to begin a home for us in the United States. And my mother, my older sister, and myself, we stayed behind. So this specific photograph exists in real life where it was taken. It was one of our last pictures in Mexico before the migration. And so for me, it was really important to highlight the fact that I, as an undocumented immigrant, I still see myself and my siblings as first generation, as the first generation that was here in the United States legally or in political terms or even in definition. We wouldn't be first generation, but I feel that with this art piece that was done in crayon, which references my first medium that I ever used as a child, it's crayon on canvas. I feel that it definitely transports the viewer to, again, this tenderness of a child reconnecting back to their childhood, and also, like, you know, making a political statement that, you know, like, regardless of what definition is, we are first generation because we grew up as American.
And Liliana, I want to talk about this sense of place. What is the significance of this exhibit being held in Oceanside?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's something that we've been grappling with since the beginning, Alexa and I, because even though we cross through San Diego and we possibly passed through Oceanside as we were kids, we didn't grow up in San Diego. And not growing up in San Diego County, San Diego holds this almost like a PTSD trigger, because it's a place that you associate with a lot of Border Patrol presence. You associate it with crossing if you remember your crossing. So, for example, for some family and friends who crossed there and do not have DACA, so they don't have protection against deportation, San Diego County is a place that they stay away from because it means an extra layer of risk in which they will be more deportable. San Diego also has a lot of undocumented people. I believe it's something around like 165,000 undocumented immigrants live in San Diego. So there is community there. However, when you don't grow up within that community, it's a bit fearful to go into that area. So for us, going to Oceanside and going back to San Diego County in a way for this exhibit is making our way back. It's like symbolically a lot like what Alexa was talking about, like returning to your childhood. It's also returning to when we were kids and we crossed through that area. So it's revisiting a lot of those meanings that as children, we don't really know what's going on. But now as an adult, we can break it apart and we can understand it more.
Yeah. Well, this exhibit is, well, it also really is like a call to action. So what do you hope people take away from it? Liliana, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I hope that for people that have never met someone that's undocumented and queer, like at that intersection, I hope that they get to learn about this experience and it humanizes undocumented and queer people at the same time. And for those that are familiar, I do hope they learn something different. And overall, I do hope that people walk away with a sense of undocumented migrant children deserving a childhood.
Yeah. Alexa, what are your thoughts?
I hope that folks from my community feel welcome to come into the museum, especially brown, queer, undocumented folks. I hope that our community comes and looks at my work and is able to see themselves. I also hope that for those folks that might not come from my community, I hope that my work impacts in some way, you know, build some compassion on them and realize that immigration is not only a straight, cis, you know, adult issue, but it also affects the way queer, brown, trans kids, it affects their lives because they themselves grow up to be adults.
I've been speaking with Alexa Vasquez. She's a visual artist whose work highlights her identities as an undocumented transgender immigrant woman. Alexa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also Liliana Ramirez. She's the curator of an exhibit open now showcasing Alexa's work. It's called Undocumented Times, Queer Yearnings. Liliana, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find more details about that exhibit and where to get tickets at kpbs.org/events. It's on display now until October, every day but Monday and Tuesday at the Oceanside Museum of Art. Plus, a celebration for the exhibit will be held on Saturday, June 8th. After the break, we catch up with arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans for what's happening in San Diego's art scene this weekend. One exhibit features the stories of elders in San Ysidro.
The artist's hope is that these stories can build community and strengthen generational bonds within the border community, and that more stories are shared in the future.
KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, inviting you to experience the science of story. 6 days of programming celebrating how and why we tell the stories that move us from July 23rd through the 28th at UC San Diego. Events include Clarion Writers Masterclass, A Tale of Two Sulus, An Evening with George Takei and John Cho, Star Trek in Concert with the San Diego Symphony, and more. For information, visit artpower.ucsd.edu.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. There's a lot going on in San Diego this weekend, from a dance showcase to live storytelling and comedy, plus the annual North Park Music Festival starts Friday. KPBS arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans is here with all the details. Julia, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you here. So first, let's talk about this art exhibit that revolves around the stories of elders in San Ysidro. Fill us in.
Yeah, so this is called Cuéntame, and it is a collaboration from artists Yvette Roman and Natalia Ventura, and it's part of the City of San Diego's recent Far South Border North arts funding series. And this is a one-week-only exhibition and community project that's at the Front Gallery in San Ysidro. And Roman and Ventura, they curated 9 emerging artists to kind of work with the elders from the nearby elder living community called Villa Merced, and they collected their stories and talked to them over the last year or so. And this exhibition has visual artwork, captured audio, and more, like documents and things like that, that represent what are really oral histories from these elders. And the artist's hope is that these stories can build community and strengthen generational bonds within the border community, and that more stories are shared in the future. They're having an opening reception that's Saturday from 5 to 7, and then a couple of events next weekend, including an elder brunch, and then a closing reception that's going to be on the 7th. So you just have 1 week to check this out, and the gallery will be open Tuesday through Sunday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. as well.
All right. We also have some dance from emerging choreographers.
Yeah, this is San Diego Dance Theater's annual Emerging Choreographers Showcase. And if you go in the audience, not only do you get to watch 8 brand new short works of contemporary dance, you also get to vote on the winner. There's an audience choice voting process. And this is a really great opportunity to see new works of dance. It's performed by talented local dancers from San Diego Dance Theater's company. There's 2 shows, 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. on Sunday night at the Lightbox Theater in Liberty Station.
Awesome. There's a special screening of a new documentary short called The Endless Mile on Sunday. This is a film that's got a lot of local connections, right?
Yeah, this is San Diego filmmaker Rebecca Barnes about her father, ultramarathoner Jimmy Barnes, and how at the age of 85, he set out to set a world record by covering 114 miles within 48 hours. And I'm pretty sure that it was around a track. So you think about how many times you're running that quarter mile track, the mental fortitude involved.
Yeah.
Pretty intense.
This, looking at the same thing over and over and over again.
Right. So all kinds of endurance there. And of course, the story in the film is not just about this race or running or shuffling, as the case may be. This is about, it's about family and Jimmy's pretty long history of dealing with grief. Jimmy also was stationed in Camp Pendleton and went through the Marines in San Diego. So there's another local connection. There's two screenings of the movie. It's just over 30 minutes long, and then they'll have a Q&A with the filmmakers. The two screenings are at 5 and 6 p.m. on Sunday at Digital Gym Cinema downtown.
All right. Well, here's something unusual. Project Blank has a new opera called The Robots, and it's actually about robots.
Right. This is a world premiere chamber opera. So it's an opera, but for a smaller orchestra. And this is by experimental composer Carolyn Chen. And this is about a group of robot factory workers who band together to unionize and try to free themselves from the mega corporation that they work for. And it has a pretty large cast of singers, including a whole robot army. And audience members can also join the robots if they bring a little colander to wear on their heads. That's in the actual ticketing information. So this is at Bread and Sal. It's in the Brick Room with three shows this weekend, 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday nights, and then 3 p.m. Sunday afternoon.
Well, musicians Larry and Joe are coming to the La Jolla Music Society, and they've got a very unique style. Tell me about that concert.
Sure. So this is Venezuelan Larry Bellarin and North Carolina's Joe Troop. And this duo is known for blending the folk traditions that they were raised with. So we have Venezuelan joropo music and Appalachian bluegrass and folk traditions. This is their track, Los Doce, that we are listening to right now. You know, you can hear kind of the intersection of the styles. There's the cadence and the instrumentation. They have banjo, cuatro, guitars, maracas, harp that they're going to be bringing to perform at this show. And this program that they have is bilingual. There'll be storytelling and some opportunities for sing-alongs as well. It's Saturday at the La Jolla Music Society with two performances. There's one at 6 and one at 8, and it's in their cabaret space, so you can order drinks right to your table.
Fabulous. All right. Well, speaking of storytelling, tell us about this next event that combines storytelling and comedy.
Yeah, so this is a project relatively new to town called Truth in Comedy. They have two events this weekend at 10th Avenue Arts Center in East Village. The way this program works is they pair three storytellers with three stand-up comics. So after each live storytelling reading, something about someone's real life, a comic will reflect on what they just heard with a stand-up set. I have a background in storytelling, and I can absolutely vouch for the fact that audiences, when they're listening to a true story, they're always hungry for any scrap of humor, even in the saddest story. It's such a connective art form, and I think it really lends itself well to this pairing in comedy. So I'm really curious about this program. And there's one more element, and that is that each show has a visual artist who's going to create works of art that are based on those three stories. This is 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and each night has different stories and different performers.
Wow. Well, let's go back to music one more time, because this weekend is the return of the North Park Music Festival. It's a two-day festival at the North Park Mini Park that runs Friday and Saturday. Tell us about the lineup.
So the music starts at 4 p.m. on Friday and noon on Saturday. There's indie, jazz, hip-hop, pop, rock acts, all of those. So pretty good range of genres across three stages in the area. And on Friday, one of the highlights for me is this local band called Rain on Fridays. We are listening to a single that they put out last year called Evolutionary Peak of Boredom, which is a great title. And Rain on Fridays is playing at 5:45 on the 29th Street stage on Friday. And then a little bit later that night at 7:30 is Particle Kid on the same stage. I'm a microphone. This is My Chord Phone from his 2022 album. And this album is incredible. It's kind of like a concept album and also features a couple of songs with Willie Nelson, who will likely not be appearing in North Park this weekend. And another highlight is Please Ask for Paul. This is a track that they put out last year called Books. And they're playing at 8:15 on the Utah Street Stage. And finally, one more on Friday is Jackie Mendoza. She is from Chula Vista, and she spent some time playing in bands in Brooklyn, like the Gingerlys, and then turned to solo work and returned home. And this is from her debut full-length. The song is called Natural. And Jackie Mendoza is playing at 9:15 on Friday.
Okay, that's Friday night. So dare I ask, who's playing on Saturday at the North Park Music Fest?
So Saturday kicks off earlier, so there are even more acts. We'll just do like a quick fire here. Some of my favorites on my radar. We have local freestyle hip-hop performer Rick Scales.
Okay.
He was a total highlight last year. He's playing with Trey Aces. There's also Drug Hunt. There's a set from Young Lions Jazz Conservatory, mm-hmm. which was another really great show, really great part of the festival last year. The headliners are Louis XIV. They're this local band who made it big years ago. They are famous for their unapologetic rock. This is a track called Louis XIV, in fact, self-titled, from their 2005 album, The Best Little Secrets Are Kept. You say that I don't care about all the things that you care about. But I'm going to leave you with Rebecca Jade and The Cold Fact. This is their track, Gonna Be All Right. They're playing Saturday afternoon at 1 on the Mini Park stage. All in all, there are 35 acts in total over the 2 days. And they're also having this indoor art gallery. It's called the Granada House Art Gallery with a sound and vision exhibition. That's open to general admission ticket holders for the first half of each day. And then, like, towards the evening, it becomes a VIP 21 and up event space. So that's something to pop in on as you kick off your festival days. And you can buy single day or 2 day passes and bring the whole family because kids are free. Kids 18 and under are free if they're with their parent or guardian.
You can find details on these and more arts and culture events and sign up for our weekly arts newsletter at kpbs.org/arts. I've been speaking with arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, thanks.
Thank you, Jade.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, inviting you to experience the science of story. 6 days of programming celebrating how and why we tell the stories that move us from July 23rd through the 28th at UC San Diego. Events include Clarion Writers Masterclass, A Tale of Two Sulus, An Evening with George Takei and John Cho, Star Trek in Concert with the San Diego Symphony, and more. For information, visit artpower.ucsd.edu.